This is 1988 Tops, where every card has a story to tell. Your hosts are David McKellis and Matt Kuzma. Let's play ball. Welcome back to 1988 Tops. David, what's our card for this week?
Our card this week is card number 581, Tito Landrum, outfielder for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
All right, Tito Landrum. And before we get to Tito, we do have some follow-up from a previous episode and also some news about Jose De Leon.
On February 25th, at the age of 63 years old, Jose De Leon passed away in the Dominican Republic. He died after a battle with cancer. And we talked about Jose a little more than a year ago in February of 2023. And I don't think that we knew that he was struggling with cancer at the time. It was a very sad thing. And we were very sorry to hear of his passing. And I do think that it has led to some folks looking back at Jose De Leon and hopefully looking at his stats and looking at his win-loss record and giving him a second evaluation and seeing that he was a great pitcher with some really bad luck. So rest in peace, Jose De Leon. We enjoy talking about him and learning about his career and digging in a little bit more. So it was very sad to see that he passed away.
Hate to see it, losing our heroes with the passage of time. But the episode with Jose De Leon was for his main card 634 and the traded 34T. David, you also had an update on our last episode about Johnny Marzano.
We had some likes on our Instagram page from the family of Johnny Marzano. So I hope that they listened and enjoyed that episode. And I did learn that one of Johnny Marzano's grandkids is a jiu-jitsu fighter. He's a child jiu-jitsu fighter. So I'm very sorry that we missed that in the episode. But he followed us on Instagram, and I wish him luck in his future fighting endeavors.
Now, is it that he fights children and is also a child, or he just fights the children as a jiu-jitsu artist?
He is a child who fights other children.
Okay.
And from the looks of it, he makes better contact than Johnny Marzano did on Paul O'Neill, but with the same level of enthusiasm for the fight.
Sounds great. Well, we'll look forward to that. If you want to be like a child jiu-jitsu fighter and follow us on Instagram, you can find us at 1988 Tops Podcast. And on to this week's card and Tito Landrum. And why are we talking about Tito today?
I don't remember what led to me picking this card. I do know that he has an amazing painted cap. And at some point in this episode, it is going to sound like I am reading from a Mad Libs. An outrageous looking card. We'll also have a diversion into WWF wrestling. He has a saber bio by Malcolm Allen. And this is a great and confusing name, Tito Landrum.
It certainly confused me when I first heard it. So let's go to the front of card 581. And we have what is obviously a painted cap. It's just a beautiful card from top to bottom. Starting at the top, you have what looks like a 20-year-old weathered Dodgers hat that's somewhat faded at the brim on the edge, that has some fading on the top where the LA logo is faded all the way, almost threadbare, from bright white into grayish blue. And what looks like it spent some time at the floor of a truck.
This hat does look kind of like a chef's hat. It's kind of ballooning out at the top as well to hold Tito. I don't know if I should call him Tito or by his first name. The card says Tito. We're going to go with Tito for most of the episode, and we'll explain that nickname in a little bit. But Tito's hair here, the voluminous hair, is being held by this rounded cap. We went back to the painted cap archives, thanks to friend of the pod, Andrew, the artist formerly known as @PaintedCap on Twitter. And Andrew said that the Topps art techniques used here are logo rotation, counterclockwise, button doctoring, buttonhole doctoring, and silver jersey effect. There is a lot going on here artistically. It does look like a silvery gray jersey. Tito, it looks like he was ready for picture day. Tito had some modeling in his background that we will get to a little bit later, but he looked ready for a picture. There's a lot of good pictures of Tito Landrum from his baseball playing days, and this is a good artist subject.
Absolutely. Let's go to the back of 581, and we have Tito Landrum, outfielder, 5'10", 175, right-handed batter and thrower, signed by the Cardinals as a free agent in 1972, born October 25th, 1954 in Joplin, Missouri, with a home in St. Louis, Missouri.
What's that you say? He's this guy named Tito Landrum was born in Joplin, Missouri.
Yeah.
That is not what I expected from a guy in this set named Tito. As we have discussed multiple times in the past, there are some not very creative nicknames for players born in Latin America. And when I saw a player named Tito Landrum listed on his card, I would have thought this is a guy maybe born in the Dominican Republic, maybe born in Puerto Rico. And Landrum himself would say, people would come up to him and say, ¿Cómo está usted, amigo? And he said, all the time that came up. He said, once a guy asked him what part of South America he's from, and he said, Joplin. His name is Terry, and he said during the off season he goes by Terry, but during the baseball season he's Tito. I was also kind of shocked that this was just a nickname given to him by some players. He said his first year in professional baseball, he was living with a guy from Mexico, a guy from Puerto Rico, a guy from the Dominican Republic. He said the Jackson Five was real popular, and one of them happened to be named Tito. His Latino teammates were learning English. They thought he looked kind of like Tito. They related him to Tito. His name started with a T, and he said the name just stuck. Kind of shocking that this is now 15-plus years later, and Tito is on his baseball card.
I've pulled up on the Jumbotron a picture that you had provided, David, of Tito Jackson from the Jackson 5.
That's from my personal collection of Tito Jackson pictures.
Yeah, this is great memorabilia you've got here. It's signed to David. How is that possible? I would say, yeah. I mean, I guess there's a resemblance very vaguely. I'm guessing that with the hat off, that Tito with the natural hairdo would have looked like Tito Jackson here. But really, he could have looked like anyone on the Jackson 5 in that era in the 1970s. So I don't really know.
Like I said, it's very strange that he then went with it. Like, he had to have some buy-in for this to end up on a baseball card, right? Like, he must have embraced it. But he did say, again, in the offseason, I'm Terry. Terry Lee Landrum was born in Joplin, Missouri. Terry's family moved all over the place. His parents were from Galena, Kansas, just west of Joplin. His dad was in the Air Force, and he was a sergeant, so the family moved a lot. They lived in 10 states in the U.S., including Nebraska, Illinois, Texas, and they also lived in Japan, the Philippines, Thailand, and he learned to play baseball while living in Asia. The family finally settled in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where his dad retired, became a champion horseshoe pitcher, and Terry went to Highland High School in Albuquerque. Famous Highlanders. We have Deb Haaland, no relation to Erling Haaland, who Deb is the current Secretary of the Interior. Phil and Gavin Maloof, owners of the Palms Hotel and Casino. NFL and College Football Hall of Famer Tommy McDonald, who was the last non-kicker to play in the NFL without a face mask. Stand-up comedian and podcaster Mark Maron. At Highland, Terry was a standout athlete, but not on the baseball field. He played football, he was a running back and punt returner. In basketball, he led Highland to the state basketball title, made the state all-star game, and he was a superstar in track and field. He set a state record with a 9.6 100-yard dash, and he finished second in the state in the decathlon. But like I said, he didn't play baseball at all on his high school team. He played some Babe Ruth League baseball, and he was good, hitting .450 and pitching. But baseball wasn't that big of a sport in New Mexico, and he said that during the summer, he had other things to do, like working for gas money. After high school, he didn't plan to become a professional athlete necessarily. He went to New York and decided to try out to be a model, but he ended up going back home to New Mexico, and a scout who had seen him play baseball in Babe Ruth League told him, if you get on a summer league team, you can get a spot playing for a junior college team. They knew that he was fast and athletic, so they told him to give baseball a try.
The scout who saw him play was Danny Doyle, who worked for the Red Sox from 1949 through his death in 2004. And Doyle was right. He got Terry a spot on Eastern Oklahoma State's team. Tito immediately impressed the team with his speed, and pro scouts started showing up. At one game, there were 17 scouts watching him. And in October 1972, he signed with the Cardinals as an outfielder, as a free agent, and was sent to Single A Orangeburg, where he hit pretty well, .279 batting average, .347 on-base percentage, and 21 steals. And around this time, this is where Terry got that nickname and became Tito. Jackson 5 had just been nominated for a Grammy for ABC in 1971. And they already had a greatest hits album, which I guess not premature. They had a whole lot of hits those first few years. So for that Orangeburg team on Baseball Reference, Tito's is the only name in bold, meaning he was the only one who made it to the major leagues. But he did have a big name teammate at Orangeburg with an even better nickname than Tito.
Let's see if I could do a little impression here. Oh, yeah! Is that a pretty good...
It's good. It's really good.
Pretty good Randy Poffo?
I would have to say more. Oh, it's the Macho Man, Randy Savage.
Sorry, but at this point, he was known as Randall Mario Poffo. Equally good name to Macho Man, Randy Savage. He was an outfielder catcher who went to Downers Grove North High School and then went to SIU, Southern Illinois University. According to Tito, Randy Poffo was pretty good on offense and defense for Orangeburg and very intense. That tracks. But Poffo had some guys in front of him in the minors who he wasn't going to get past. So basically, he wasn't going to move anywhere in the Cardinals organization. And so after a couple years, Poffo decided to give up on baseball. But the two players roomed together sometimes with Orangeburg, and they got along pretty well. But by 1974, Poffo hung up his baseball equipment. And some years later, Tito gets an invitation to a wrestling match. But he didn't recognize the name. He said, "Who's this Macho Man?" And when he found out that it was Randy Poffo, he said, "I just had to go see Randy." The two kept in touch over time. When Landrum was living in New York later, Macho Man would leave tickets for him to go see some wrestling promotions. And when Macho Man passed away in 2011, Landrum was asked about his old friend. And he said he remembered Poffo making makeshift wrestling rings in the clubhouse, doing some choreographed shows to entertain his teammates. And Tito said he just knew that Poffo was going to make it big somehow. But he said he didn't have the best athletic ability, but he certainly had the most qualified heart that I've ever seen.
That's a fantastic story. Makes me want to snap into a Slim Jim. Ooh, yeah.
We'd have to pay royalties.
Yeah, we're not gonna do that unless Slim Jim, if you'd like to sponsor the 1988 Topps podcast, we're open to that. In 1974, Tito was at A level in St. Petersburg. He had just hit .236, but had 9 triples in 87 games. And then a meniscus injury ended his season. So he was back at A ball in 1975. He had 11 homers, but only a .221 average. He had trouble hitting curveballs, which is kind of an issue if you want to make it up the ladder. But he's still just 20 years old. The Cardinals gave him some time to learn. So he moved up to AA Arkansas in 1976. Must have started hitting the curveball better because he hit .276 with 7 home runs, earning a brief promotion to AAA Tulsa, and was on the Cardinals' 40-man roster that winter, but started 1977 in AA.
And he was bad. By his own admission, he said, "I was terrible." He hit .214 at AA, got demoted all the way back down to A-ball. He's in his fifth season, and he's right back where he started. He hit .245 at A-ball, then had some injured muscles under his right arm, leading him to miss time, and he was worried that he would never be able to throw again. It was really a difficult time in his life. He was making $500 a month playing baseball, but that only paid him for half the year while he was playing. He also said he never thought about giving up. Instead, he took some second jobs. He worked as a security guard at a department store. He said, "I think I got $5.80 an hour. I finally quit after somebody pulled a knife on me."
But 1978, he was back, and he had regained arm strength, playing racquetball in the offseason, and had his best season yet. I guess kind of a magical training technique. It worked for him, hitting .297 and earning a fun fact on the back of the card that Tito led the Florida State League with 25 doubles and 68 stolen bases at St. Petersburg. during the 1978 season. Along with those steals and doubles, he had more walks than strikeouts and earned his way out of A-ball for good. And he also got married to a woman named Teresa. Things are really looking up in 1978. 1979 was split between AA and AAA. He had similar numbers at both levels, combined for .264 average, 9 homers, and 23 steals. And then in 1980, he was even better, hitting .314 with 11 home runs in late July. And the Cardinals needed a replacement for the injured Bobby Bonds.
So they call up Tito. He makes his first appearance as a pinch hitter on July 23rd. 2 days later, he gets his first start against the Padres, and he went 4-for-5 with a double and a run scored. He said, "It took 8 long years, but it was all worth it." He stayed with the team for a few weeks, went back to Springfield when Bonds came off the injured list, and he returned for September and finished the season with a .247 average in 35 games. 1981 is the strike season. He spent the whole year in St. Louis, appearing in 81 games, hitting .261 for a Cardinals team that would finish in first place, but they finished in second both halves of the season. So they had the best record in the NL East, but they didn't make the playoffs because they didn't finish in first place either half of the season. So no playoffs, but Tito did get a new possible career path when the strikes stopped his paychecks. He was hired as a manager trainee at a St. Louis restaurant. Luckily, baseball resumed and he did not have to go into restaurant management.
St. Louis restaurants usually involve throwing rolls at people. So I would hate to be on the wrong
Man,
end
this
of
is
a,
the
thrown rolls. Lambert's. Lambert's is the main restaurant I'm thinking about. Thrown rolls. They just throw rolls from across the floor. And I'm guessing that's where Tito went.
And that's a good way to strengthen your arm. He had those arm muscle injuries. We do have a listener who lives near Lambert's and deeply appreciated you mentioning thrown rolls.
Happy to oblige. 1982, the Cardinals already have a full outfield with Lonnie Smith, Willie McGee, George Hendrick, and David Green. So Tito's not going to make it as a starter, but he did make the team as a backup, playing in 79 games and starting in 12. He played well in that limited assignment, hitting .278 with a .113 OPS plus, and he got his first big league home run, which he hit off of Atlanta's Ken Daly on May 13th. Daly would later be Tito's teammate in St. Louis. And then he hit his second home run a couple weeks later against San Francisco. That fall, he did not make the playoff roster, but he was with the team to work out and prepare for the World Series. And when the Cardinals won it all, he did receive a ring for his contributions to the team.
1983 would be his 11th year with the Cardinals organization. He played only 5 games for St. Louis when they needed to call up an infielder, so they sent him down to AAA. At this point, he was out of options, so if the Cardinals tried to call him back to the big leagues, he would have to pass through waivers, meaning any other team could claim him for $25,000. So the Cardinals kept him in AAA, hitting .292 with 18 home runs and 12 triples, having just a fantastic year, but the Cardinals can't call him up because they're afraid somebody else will get him for basically nothing. So in June, the Cardinals traded for Floyd Rayford, and we talked about this on Floyd's episode, that they traded him for a player to be named later, and on August 31st, Tito was that player. He got to Baltimore just in time to make the playoff roster deadline. He said, "I figured they must think highly of me if they wanted me to be eligible," and the Orioles would have liked to have had an infielder, but they said that Tito was the best player available, so they got him on the team. He was a career Cardinal, but he felt like he immediately fit in with the Orioles and that Orioles magic. He met the team in Toronto, and as he walked into the clubhouse, 6'8 reliever Tim Stoddard picked him up and said, "Welcome to the team, little guy."
I love that. Tito said the team welcomed him and included him in the inside jokes and made him feel at home. And he returned the favor, playing well, hitting .310 in 42 at-bats in over 26 games. The Orioles went 20-6 in those games. On the final day of the season, outfielder Dan Ford hurt his leg, so Landrum made the postseason roster as a precaution. And in the 1983 ALCS, in Game 1, Landrum was a pinch runner for Dan Ford and scored the Orioles' only run in a 2-1 loss. Ford's leg injury was back, so Tito got a start in Game 2, going 0-for-4 in a win. He was a pinch hitter in an 11-1 win in Game 3, and then in Game 4, he got another start. Britt Burns was starting for the White Sox on the verge of elimination. The Orioles didn't want to face Lamar Hoyt in Game 5 because Hoyt had closed the season with 13 straight wins and then won Game 1 against the Orioles. So they really wanted to finish things up in Game 4. In the clubhouse, Landrum and the team kept saying, "No farther." That was their motto. They needed a win. No farther. No further. Further? Said, farther? I don't know.
No further? No farther.
No father.
Hey, look, no I copied father. And pasted that. No father?
No father. No
father. This ends now.
Kind of a lame motto. This ends now. I don't get it. It doesn't really have a zip to it. But Game 4 was a windy one at the Old Comiskey. Normal home run balls were getting knocked down by the wind, with the wind blowing in off of Lake Michigan. And the White Sox had opportunities in the 7th and 9th innings, but failed to capitalize. And so through 9 innings, the game was tied 0-0.
Britt Burns stays in for the 10th inning. Again, it's a different time when you would keep your starting pitcher in to let guys see him 5 times through the order. With one out, Landrum is up, hitting coach who told him he was uppercutting, and his coach told him, just do what you do best, hit the ball from gap to gap. Tito had also talked to his mom the night before, who said that she was praying for him to hit a home run, and he said, "Mom, I am not a home run hitter." And maybe that's, you know, just some reverse engineering a good story. Maybe his mom told him that before every game, and this time it just so happened. Tito said that he was just trying to hit the ball up the middle. Again, this is his 5th at bat against Burns in the game. On the broadcast, Tony Kubek said Landrum was not the deep threat. He had one home run that season with the Orioles, but he did have an impressive 18 at Louisville. So on an 0-1 count, Britt Burns delivers a fastball.
Second deck.
Just an absolute bomb. Off the upper deck facade, Tito said, "I'm not a home run hitter, never claimed to be, but I knew when I hit it that the ball was gone." The feeling was solid. It felt so nice.
The Orioles added 2 more runs and earned a spot in the World Series. Tito was the unlikely hero and said, "Pinch me before I get out of here and make me believe it really happened." It was Orioles magic.
Something magic happens every time you go. You make the magic happen, the magic of Orioles baseball. When the game is close and the oats are hot, there's a thundering roar from 34 to give it all they've got. And you never know who's gonna hear them call. Every game has a different start. That's the magic of Orioles baseball.
Orioles magic, feel it happen. Orioles magic, feel it happen. O-R-I-O-L-E-S. Magic, 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 magic.
In the World Series, Dan Ford returned, and Landrum was back to the bench. He made 3 appearances in the World Series, one as a pinch runner and got a stolen base in Game 2. Then he was a defensive replacement in Games 4 and the final Game 5. He caught the first out of the 9th inning of Game 5, making a long run to the corner, and was on the field when the team won the World Series, which was a much better way to get a ring than that 1982 experience, but still back-to-back rings for Tito Landrum.
In spring training 1984, Tito's playing well, expecting to be on the opening day roster. The Orioles played the Cardinals, and Landrum was chatting with Hal Lanier, who at the time was one of St. Louis's coaches. He said, "Good luck, and I hope to see you sometime." Tito said that, assuming, "Maybe I'll see you in the World Series." Lanier said, "You never know, it's baseball." 10 days before opening day, Tito is sent back to the Cardinals for AAA pitcher Oscar Brito. Landrum said he felt like he was the player to be named later in my own trade. 5 days later, Floyd Rayford's contract was bought back by the Orioles, so that 1983 trade was basically reversed. And one unnamed executive said that the players had been loaned for each other. The Orioles were reluctant to make the trade, but they said they were caught up in a numbers game and somebody had to go. They had too many outfielders, too many players on their roster, and they had to get rid of somebody. So they sent Tito back to St. Louis, where he would spend the next few seasons as a role player. 1984, he hits .272 with 3 home runs in 105 games. And he was very good as a pinch hitter this season. In 24 plate appearances, he had 2 of those home runs and a .391 average. Landrum was happy to get playing time and also hit his only walk-off home run in 1984, a home run that Mets pitcher Jesse Orosco said was a, quote, 700-foot home run.
It's Ron Kittle territory there. In 1985, Tito platooned with lefty hitting Andy Van Slyke. And David, we now have some items here that sound like an AI version of the 1988 Topps podcast. Tito was a fun character on this Cardinals team. He had a shirt that said Tanto Van Slandrum with a caricature of the two players, Tito and Andy Van Slyke.
Tanto Van Slandrum.
Tanto Van Slandrum. Tanto Van Slandrum. I think good.
That makes no sense.
I think that's a really good job. Tito and Andy would together right. would be Tanto. And
right.
then,
yeah, obviously.
And then Van Slander. I like it. I really think that's good. And it does look like what, you know, Midjourney would put on the back of a baseball uniform. If you said, hey, draw me a baseball uniform of an outfielder, it would have some weird letters and, you know, give up a fake name like that. Most of them would be like Russian letters too. I don't know why that happens that way. But all the same, Tito developed an alter ego, Vaporman. According to the New York Times, Vaporman was a frothy white apparition covered from head to toe in shaving cream and would dance and run through the clubhouse.
I don't know. I could not find any pictures of this. I don't know if there is video of this, but apparently during the celebration in 1985 in the NLCS, Vaporman made an appearance. And also this season, Tito finally got that modeling job for a shirtless poster that was sold at Busch Stadium concession stands. According to the New York Times, this poster was made for a group called Child Find Missouri, which traced missing children. And I think it is questionable. I don't know. Like, really, you have missing children.
He has his shirt off and a...
When I think of raising money for finding missing children, I think of a shirtless Tito Landrum.
That's some very strange taste. They asked him if he was about to become a sex symbol, and Tito said, no way, not even to my wife. It's good comedy there. In 1985, he played in 85 games in that platoon, hitting .280 with 4 homers and a .119 OPS plus. The Cardinals won 101 games, taking the National League East title by 3 games over the Mets. And in the NLCS against the Dodgers, Landrum was not expected to play a large role. He pinch hit in game 1, driving in the only run in a 4-1 loss. He pinch hit again in game 3, got an out, but the Cardinals won. So the series was 2-1 with the Dodgers ahead. But then one of the most bizarre incidents occurred.
Prior to game 4, Rookie of the Year Vince Coleman got caught in Busch Stadium's mechanical tarpaulin. This injured his leg, took him out for the series. And Tito Landrum is called in as the emergency replacement in game 4. He said he didn't have time to be nervous. He had no jitters. He came up and went 4-for-5 with 3 RBIs in a 12-2 blowout. While Tito didn't think that he would be a sex symbol, a few female fans in the stands were holding up his poster during the game. And who could blame them with that kind of performance as a replacement? That big win helped turn the series. Landrum played in games 5 and 6, both Cardinals wins, and he had another hit, finishing the NLCS with a .429 average.
In the World Series, Tito played in every game and got hits in every game. He scored a run in each of the Cardinals' victories, including a home run in the second inning of game 4. That helped spark a win that put the Cardinals up 3-1 in the series. George Brett said, "The way Tito's playing, I want Vince to play. I hear Vince is an exciting player, but this guy Tito's killing us." So going into game 5, Tito's on fire. But then in games 5, 6, and 7, he went only 3-for-10, all losses, including the heartbreaking game 6 loss, thanks to Don Dankinger's missed call. The series didn't end how Tito and the best fans in baseball would have hoped, but Landrum was grateful to play a role. And again, this is a three World Series teams is a part of in 4 years.
An unfortunate end, but a very good series. And he just has an impressive postseason stat line for his career and just was on some very good teams and an important player on those teams. In 1986, Landrum had a career-high 205 at-bats, started 48 games, but he hit only .210. On the personal life side of things, it was a little bit complicated. He was going through a divorce off the field. And heading into 1987, he also was trying to get into shape, to bulk up. He got on a new nutrition and workout program. And he started opening day when Willie McGee was injured, but then ended up having some of his own injury issues. He fractured his foot on a foul ball in batting practice and missed a month of the season. When he went to Louisville for rehab, the Cardinals decided that they would go with Bradley University alum Jim Lindman for outfield depth. Lindman was a little bit younger and had some more power, and they ended up releasing Tito, who signs with the Dodgers, which gives us this beautiful painted cap. He hit .239 with a home run in 51 games in LA, but then right before opening day in 1988, he was released. He went and joined the Orioles again, played in 7 of the Orioles' 21 straight losses in 1988. He played 13 games in April and May, was briefly in AAA, but then he refused to be sent down permanently on May 10th, and the Orioles released him.
He closed out the 1988 season with the Rangers' AAA team, played 1989 for the Reds' AAA team in Nashville, hitting only .221. And that year he turned 35 years old, so he was eligible to play for the Senior Professional Baseball Association. And there he was an all-star, hitting .346 with 11 triples for West Palm Beach. He was briefly on the Miami Miracle, an A-level team, but hit only .152. And in 1991, he played in the Mexican League and finally called it a career there. So closing the book on Tito Landrum, 9 seasons in the major leagues, .249 batting average with 13 home runs, 12 triples, and 120 runs, 111 RBIs, and an OPS plus of 84. In the postseason, he hit .347 with 2 home runs and an OPS of 870 in 19 games. He had 2 World Series rings and 1 Orioles Magic home run. How about in retirement?
From his first marriage, Tito had 2 kids. One of his daughters, Julie, was married to NBA star Paul Pierce, and he has 5 grandkids. In retirement, he moved to New York with his longtime partner, Carol Williams. Carol had worked in the TV news media in St. Louis, and after over 30 years together, they got married in 2019. Initially, they had planned to get married in 1988, but then when Tito was released by the Dodgers, it kind of threw everything into disarray, and they just, you know, put it off for 31 years. With Carol's encouragement, Landrum decided to go back to school. He said he was scared because he had been an average student in high school, and he was in high school in the 1970s he graduated. He had no background in science or math, and yet he had an interest because of his history of both fitness and also injuries in becoming a physical therapist. So he applies to NYU and commits himself to education. He got his bachelor's in physical therapy in 1998 and was the class valedictorian chosen by his peers. He said that there were students who had better GPAs than him, but his students respected him and his work ethic, and they chose him to be the valedictorian. He also worked as a baseball coach for the NYU baseball team in that time that he was at the school. He became a physical therapist, first in New York for 14 years, and then moved his business to California. And he said, when you give someone back their lifestyle and you can help them regain their life, it's very rewarding.
So David, this episode began with the beautiful painted cap and painted jersey. And now we end up with a guy who was part of multiple World Series teams and had a whole second career out of baseball as a physical therapist, which is a really cool story. So after digging in a little bit more, what do we think?
Tito Landrum was a decent player with some good tools, incredibly fast when he was younger, and really a great athlete when he was younger. In the big leagues, he was generally a replacement level player, and he only had 2 regular season games where he got on base more than 3 times in his career, and only 13 regular season home runs. But in the playoffs, he had 2 home runs in 19 games, Andy had a game with four hits where he was a replacement, not expected to play. He was an injury replacement for Dan Ford and then for Vince Coleman, a guy that Joe Altobelli and Whitey Herzog loved to have around because he knew what his role was and he could perform when called upon. He was a sign of depth for that 1983 Orioles team that, due to injuries, getting called into action, and then having one of the most iconic moments of that franchise's history and of that championship season in the ALCS. And especially for a guy who only spent two seasons with the Orioles to become a legend for that one shining moment of playoff glory is pretty amazing. And we've had other guys who had maybe slightly better careers but didn't have as big a single moment as Tito Landrum had. In 2023, it was the 40th anniversary of that World Series victory, and I found an article about the heroes of Birdland. They talk about names like Brooks Robinson, Cal Ripken, Eddie Murray, Jim Palmer, all-time greats, and then some guys who maybe were one-season wonders, who Brady Anderson hitting 50 home runs, and then other guys who were remembered for that one swing. And according to that site, none of those swings were as important in Orioles history as Terry Tito Landrum's home run. He was so unexpected as a hero, and yet so important. And there's a lot about Terry in this story that's unexpected, from his name to this baseball career after not having played for your high school baseball team, to a friendship with Macho Man Randy Savage, playoff success, and then to being the valedictorian at NYU at 43 years old. Terry has led a really remarkable life. And he said that he was not an everyday player, so he had to go to practice early. He said, "I would stay late and listen to everybody. I accepted criticism. That was the only way to learn." And he took that same mentality into higher education at a very good school and performed well. And he said that he had to work harder than everybody else because he was older and out of practice with education. But it's really admirable and really shows a lot about his work ethic and that work ethic that led to him having a productive major league career and some great moments for some great teams.
Tito could have pursued so many different sports, was just a great athlete, then really dug in, got better and better and better. And even if he was just a replacement level player most of the time, the fact that he was ready to step up in big moments is just a great story. And then bringing that same kind of curiosity to his second career is just very cool to see. So thank you very much for the story, David. And thank you to you at home. If you're ready to finish off Hulk Hogan with the flying elbow drop, we would love to see it. Post the video on our Facebook page. We are at 1988 Tops Podcast. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next week.